Blog Talk Radio.
Well, this is Blog Talk Radio. Hi, I'm Russ Johnson, and it's Sunday, and it's April 9th, 2023. And today we've brought to deal with another subject matter that I call the light side, the dark side. And we are looking at those entities that are coming to planet Earth, reptilians, Palladians, blue avians, Nordics, whatever. Some are saying that are light workers, and some other people are saying they represent the cabal, they represent the dark side. I don't know, but there are people who have been doing a lot of research on this subject for many, 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 many decades, many years. And so I let them address the issue. But first, I just want to say that from what I understand, and when I look at the 12th planet by Dr. Zachariah Sitchens, he's saying that human beings on this planet happen to be, have been created by the Anunnaki. So I'm going to turn to Dr. Seller, Michael Seller, a prolific writer. He's all over the place in terms of understanding all the nuances of what we're talking about. And he talks about the Anunnaki and human beings.
Tonight, I connected to Thorhan, and he showed me that he was on the Nibiru ship taking care of an operation of transfer of medical holographic technologies onto a Galactic Federation of Worlds vessel. He was wearing an environmental suit. They were in a cargo bay of the Nibiru ship. I could glimpse the quick vision of a large oval aperture opening onto space. Thorhan was watching the Galactic Federation of Worlds personnel loading the technologies on board the Galactic Federation vessel. They were about to leave and bring this to Luna, which is developing into a medical hub. I asked Thorhan if he had met Enki. He said no, that he dealt with the Nibiru crew. This made me realize that, of course, Enki is not on his own in this huge spherical ship. There is a whole Anunnaki crew as well. End quote. I have previously discussed the collaboration between the Galactic Federation of Worlds and the Earth Alliance in developing advanced technologies for the defense, transportation, and medical industries that will eventually be released. According to several sources, these technologies are allegedly being mass-produced on retrofitted facilities on the Moon. The timing of the release of these holographic medical technologies is dependent on the deep state being removed from power. This raises the question of whether Enki's gift is a Trojan horse for an unknown agenda, as proposed by some skeptics. Historical texts such as the Atrahasis clearly depict Enki as playing the key role in creating modern Homo sapiens and being humanity's protector from a rival Anunnaki faction led by Enlil, his half-brother, who regarded humans as a threat. In his book, Escaping from Eden, Paul Wallace describes several instances where the Elohim, also known as the Anunnaki, felt threatened by humanity's potential and took dramatic actions to limit our development, as exemplified in stories of the Great Flood and Tower of Babel. Significantly, Enki was either opposed to or was not involved in these instances of the Anunnaki slash Elohim stepping in to stop or impede human development. Consequently, there is good reason to be optimistic that the medical holographic technology Enki has passed on to the Galactic Federation of Worlds is precisely what Elena Danan has described in The Cedars, A Gift to Humanity. Alex Collier's response reveals that the Andromedans have a positive view of Enki and his motivations, and Alex is supportive of such technology being used. Given the available information, there is reason to be cautiously optimistic about what is transpiring behind the scenes regarding new medical holographic technologies that can restore the original Adamic DNA blueprint. This incredible technology, which will enable the extended human lifespans reported in religious texts, will, at some point in the near future, be offered to humanity by an Earth Alliance cooperating with the Galactic Federation of Worlds and the Enki faction of the Anunnaki. Will Enki's gift be accepted by everyone? Some will refuse out of fear or ignorance. Others will decline due to their strong belief that the activation of 12-stranded DNA and life extension is possible through epigenetic and spiritual practices that don't require any technology. It can be anticipated, however, that a majority of humanity will accept undergoing such a holographic medical process if it is recommended by Earth Alliance leaders, which appears very likely given their active participation in the mass production of such technologies. In my own case, I'm an agnostic on the need for holographic medical technologies for DNA activation when similar results can be achieved through epigenetic and spiritual practices. However, I recognize that such an organic, non-technological pathway may not be practical for a vast majority of humanity who have led a life of dependency on medical technologies and pharmaceutical products, or whose religious convictions preclude epigenetic and spiritual practices that can change one's own DNA.
So we have Jillian with us this morning. I was playing something about Dr. Sella as I was trying to get you on this line. So what do you think about what he was saying? I think you heard that before, the discussion.
Yes, I have. Well, I'm all in favor of improving the human DNA. It certainly needs some corrective work on it because of the mistakes that were made with the original genetic engineering. And this is well known, and their work is already being done on this line to try and correct the mistakes of the past. Using artificial means to enlighten or make you as a person more enlightened by using nanotechnology of some kind, that I can see that they can do it. I can agree that it is possible to do it, but I don't think that it does you any good. It's rather like, you know, somebody giving you a car and then they do all the driving for you. You never learn to drive yourself. The whole thing about enlightenment is the other side of what he was saying, that it needs to be done through spiritual practices that you can do yourself. And this, of course, is the long road home, but it is the road home. The other is just a fill-in, which means nothing in terms of infinity. You cannot really learn through someone else's work. You can learn by it, but not through it. And so you as a soul are not going to advance if you're using nanotechnology to implant enlightenment into you.
I see. Okay. All right. But so that discussion is being held by the Galactic Command, if I understand, between Enki and whomever. Is that right?
Well, yes, they're all discussing it. Absolutely.
How do you think this is going to fare out? I mean, look, it's a big battle going on, obviously. I mean, we have the light side, we have the dark side, we have so many different species coming to the planet to see what's going on. Which, 9 billion people on planet Earth here, and you think many are coming from different parts of the galaxy to see what's taking place here?
Yes, I do.
Okay,
I do.
Why? Why come here? Well,
because it's an unusual experience that is happening on Earth. Earth is one of the very few places, so far as I am aware, where telepathy is not in common usage. We actually are quite isolated one from another. We don't read one another's minds. We don't hear one another's thoughts, as they do in many places and among many species. And so this gives us a unique opportunity to actually exercise free will, in that we can make choices in the secret recesses of our own hearts that nobody else will ever know about. They are our secrets. And so we are able to make choices in this unique way. And we therefore have the opportunity, like nowhere else, to choose between the dark side and the light side, between the light and the dark. Everything that exists in the shadow of the light, of course. And so I'm not saying that they don't have their value. It's like the universe runs like a piezo electricity system. It's either on or it's off. When it's on, it's full of light. When it's off, it's full of darkness. When it's running the way it should, it's enlightened. When it's falling back in some way, it's dark. So I'm not saying that one is more right than the other. It's just an entirely different side of the same picture. And the picture is we, humanity, trying to evolve, trying to move into the light and become enlightened beings. And ultimately, we will. The light pushes back the dark all the time. And this really is, it's like, how do we get, okay, here's a secret. And they're just telling me this, right? They're just explaining it to me in this way, right? That as you evolve as an individual soul, you can reach that level of enlightenment where you are putting light out from your body. Instead of taking light in, you are putting light out. And in this way, you are feeding the universe. When you are not moving towards enlightenment, when you are getting every choice in your life wrong, then you are in darkness and you are dependent upon taking light from the universe to keep your existence going. Now, there can come a time when every human being on this planet and every species in the universe reaches that level of enlightenment where they are all putting out light. And that would completely overcome the darkness. Because what are we talking about? We're talking about energy. And the energy of the universe is light. When it's on, it's energy pouring out. When it's off in the darkness, it's trying to gather energy, you might say. So when we are all enlightened, when we are all putting light out, then we are fully enlightening our environment, our universe. We're getting pushing back all the darkness, and we have a permanent state of endless, unending energy. Now, we all understand the need for energy in terms of oil and gas and so on and so forth. Think of it in terms of light. Light is the stuff of the universe. It is what everything is made of. And in order to see this, in order to be aware of it, the light has to be on, right? It has to be in the on switch. But when it's in the on switch, then it is using energy. It is burning up its own energy. So becoming enlightened as an individual is really a self-preservation program because we want to preserve the energy of the universe and we want to add to it. And by becoming enlightened, by becoming spiritually evolved and adding light to the universe, putting light out from ourselves instead of taking it in, we are then extending the life of the universe in which we exist. And this is never going to happen until people change their perspective. Our perspective of everything determines our lives, determines how we live, in what way we live, even to an extent where we choose to live. All our choices are based on our perspective. And if we see a perspective of ongoing enlightenment, of moving always towards more light, more light, more light, then we are constantly moving our own perspective into something which is a forward spiral, upward movement that is advancing us spiritually and helping the universe at the same time.
Mm-hmm. We have the conflict between the light workers and the dark workers here on the planet. Now, that's a big discussion. How do you discern who is working toward the development of the universe or taking away from the universe? The light workers, the dark workers.
Okay. I would say, first of all, that many out there, first of all, they don't go around claiming, I'm a light worker, I'm a dark worker, right? We all do our work in our own way. And sometimes our work hopefully serves the light. There are occasions for all of us when unwittingly our work has served the dark side. And I think this is where the difficulty comes in, that most humans who are working and benefiting the aims and goals of the dark side are actually not aware that they are doing it. They are doing it unwittingly. They may even believe that they are doing work for good, when in fact what they are doing is maybe very, very damaging to the human race. So we should not make judgments, and we should not make a judgment of right and wrong in this sense. It is really all a matter of the perception of it, of our experience of the perception. But when our perception can clearly see that something is dark and damaging, then it is our, I almost want to say, it is our duty to remark on it. And the reason I say that is because some person, in all innocence, they might even believe they are a light worker. They might go around saying they are a light worker. But the stories that they are putting out there are not true. They are not the truth. Or they are a very distorted version of a truth, because they have had their minds manipulated by beings whose darkness is self-evident. And in this, I'm talking about those extraterrestrials among us who are the greys. Very dark energy, nasty, bad abductions, a whole bad long-term history of doing things that are less than desirable for the human race. However, we should always remember that even the darkest of the dark side are doing what they are doing for their benefit. The greys do what they do to benefit the greys. The cabal of this planet, the humans in the cabal on this planet, do what they do for the benefit of the members of their cabal. And there are thousands of them, right? All their families and hierarchies and so on and so forth. They do what is best for them. And this is the great, great difference in the steps forward to enlightenment between what is done by all these different species we speak of, like the reptilians do what is good for the reptilians. The Germans under Antarctica are doing what is good for the Fourth Reich, so on. They're all doing what they believe is good for themselves. And this is one of the things that makes Earth and humans on Earth unique. Our teacher didn't just teach us about how to do clever things in the universe, how to be great scientists or achievers, or how to travel in space and give us advanced technology. Our great teacher, and of course I'm talking to the risen one today, Lord Jesus Christ, what he taught us was the way to enlightenment is by doing that which benefits other people as well as self. He didn't say we shouldn't benefit ourselves. In fact, he said love yourself. But he said love yourself as you love your neighbor, or love your neighbor as you love yourself. So this is about what I was speaking of originally. To become enlightened, we can reach the stage where we put enlightenment out into the universe. We give off light. We give off energy. And that energy benefits all those around us. It benefits the entire universe, but it benefits our friends and our neighbors. And there is that other great saying, by their deeds they shall be known, or by their works they shall be known. And in this it is saying, it's not enough just to sit and meditate and become enlightened. You have to put it into action. You have to be helpful to your neighbor. And your neighbor is everybody else on this planet. We only have one planet. We are one race, the human race on Earth, and every single person is our neighbor because we are all one. We are one people, one planet, one universe, right? And ultimately, everything is the one. Right now, we are perceiving our world as being full of individuals, full of separate cities and towns and countries. but actually it's one. And it helps us to move forward and shift our perception a little bit if we think of it as being one world, one planet. To try and conceive of everything as one in the universe is very difficult. It's very hard for anybody to conceive of that idea. But it's not hard for us to think of one world, especially when you see that NASA picture of the planet Earth floating in space. You know, it's a wonderful photograph, and it does remind us that we are just one little blue ball floating out there in space, and everybody on Earth is connected to everybody else. Now, in order to really get this into our system, we can think in terms of everybody has a cell phone, or billions of people belong to Facebook or the social programs. We have this technological connectivity, and we understand that, and we know we have it, right? What we need to realize is that we also have the heart and soul connectivity, that we are all one people, all connected to each other, responsible for each other. We all have a duty of caring to ourselves and to our neighbors. And that neighbor could be somebody on the other side of the planet. But it is our responsibility, our obligation, and our duty, if we wish to evolve spiritually, to not only set our minds on the highest things we can think of, set our minds on the source, the all, the God, the light, the creation, but also to keep our physical bodies reminded that the person next door or the person in the next city is also something that we desire to connect with.
Okay. I'm looking at the hybrids who are coming here on planet Earth. Now, the hybrids are made, formed, conceived on various spaceships in the universe. And sometimes entities come here on planet Earth and create that. It was in the Bible about the gods of heaven appreciating the women of Earth back in Ephesians or something like that. How do you see that coming along? The hybrids coming, what role will they play?
Well, you know, here's a question, and I've placed it before you more than once, Russell.
Okay.
Ask where they get the information from, because many of the hybrids, I am sure, are the product of the manipulation of abductions by the Greys, right? So those hybrids are carrying the Greys energy. And the Greys were never good news for humans, right? They were antagonistic to our human development for a variety of reasons, not because they're evil, but because they are emotionless. They have no genuine sense of love, right? Love is the key that holds the universe together. And many of these species have evolved to such a level, both technologically, that they have become so dependent on their technology that they have lost all sense of emotion. It simply isn't in them. It's been bred out of them, you might say. And that's what many of these abductions and hybrid breedings were about, were these actual alien species. They're part of the human family throughout the universe. We're all part of the human family. So when I say alien, I mean not of planet Earth, right? The only true aliens being completely different, entirely not like us, are the reptilians, right? Let's set them aside. We're not ever talking about them. We're talking about all the other species that I know as humans, and there are hundreds of them, right, that are the human family throughout the universe. But these hybrid children, I really don't know much about what's going on with them on Earth. I mean, I don't watch television, and I don't know what's going on with all this stuff, except when you send me little clips that I can read, right? But my concern is, who has been their progenitor? Where have they come from? Now, that's quite different to what you were talking about that is in the Bible. What is in the Bible is about the time when the Anunnaki, pre-Sumerian times, when the Anunnaki were on the planet, going through the Sumerian times when they had developed through genetic engineering, Homo sapiens sapien, to the point where the women were attractive to the men of the Anunnaki. And the men specifically of the Anunnaki that were attracted were the group that basically followed Marduk, Enki's son. And Marduk was the commander, like the general in charge of the Air Force, the Space Force of the Anunnaki. And his astronauts are called the Ajiji. And they had were left on Mars originally. They manned the space station on Mars, which was the refueling station for the Anunnaki for millions of years. Right now, when they got fed up with being there, they were brought down to Earth, and they were the ones who rebelled against digging for gold. They were put to work, like we put our military to work digging ditches and things. They were put to work digging for the gold. Well, they got fed up with it after a very long time. Several hundred years they were fed up. So they gave up. By then, the women were available, the daughters of men, human women, and they found them beautiful and attractive. And many of them married those women and had families with them. That was not the same thing as taking women, abducting them, and creating hybrid children. Yes, they did produce hybrid children. And we know those, we know the stories of many of those children from the ancient mythologies. They're considered to be myths now. All the old heroes, you know, Hercules and Ulysses and all the old Greek heroes that did marvelous things, right? These were the children of the Anunnaki and the women. And they were real people living on Earth in real families. And it was the reason that many of the Anunnaki never left the planet. They stayed on this planet with it because they didn't want to leave their families behind. And their families were not able to go with them. They couldn't have whatever endured. I don't know why they didn't take them, but they didn't. And they made their first base here, underwater base, under Lake Titicaca in Peru. That base is still there. You still see the ships going in and out. So the Anunnaki are the same as Earth humans. The Homo sapiens sapien, which they genetically created by altering the existing female on the planet, right? Those are exactly like the Anunnaki. And these were the gods in the Bible. And when the Bible says God made man in his own image, he's not talking about the creator of the universe or the all, the source, at all. It's talking about the Anunnaki gods, the Elohim and Jehovah, right? Jehovah or Yahweh or many pronunciations of the name, the Yod Vohei, Yeshua. There are many, many ways to pronounce it, but they settled on Jehovah. The Jewish people settled on Jehovah pretty much, right? That was Enki and referenced Enki when he was down on the planet talking to his brother and other members of the family in the garden about what they were going to do with the Earth species and arranging and setting up the genetic engineering. And this was done with their own genes. They put their own genes in. So it is true. Homo sapiens, us, we normal humans, were made exactly in the image or copies of the physicality of the Anunnaki. It's just the Anunnaki are much bigger in stature and they have copper, a great deal of copper in their system, where we on Earth have iron. The normal Earth human uses iron as the oxygen carrier in their blood. The Anunnaki use copper. So we really were made in God's image, and we were miniature replicas of the God who did the genetic, or God small g. Jehovah, the biblical God, is a God small g. He came from the heavens. The heaven is a real place up there in the sky. It's where the Anunnaki live, right? And there are more than one planet involved in the system where they live. And they came down here, and those are the biblical gods. And that is the lineage of Christ. And that is who we in Christianity hold to, believe, follow, right. If you like.
Right. I was listening to Bell. Did you ever listen to Art Bell when he was here?
Yes, I did.
He had millions and millions and millions and millions of followers.
Yes.
Excellent shows, way in the middle of the night, coast to coast, I believe it was called. But
yes.
Here's a clip of he interviewing a guy who happens to be talking about the hybrids and the purpose, goals, and objectives of the hybrids.
Insect-like ones simply do not tell their motivations. And when sometimes people ask hybrids, why are you here? You know, what's the point of all this? They'll say, my job, my task is to live here. That's all I know. That's all they know. They don't know, in other words.
God. You know, what you have said is so astounding. A master race that is capable of mind control. We don't yet know their motives, but they're probably ultimately not good. I mean, they've got something they want to do. I have not yet seen the hybrids, as it were, improve our lives in any way.
Well, I think it's still fairly early on, and before we begin to understand that something else is going on. Here's one generalization you can make about the aliens, and this is a large generalization, but it's probably accurate. Doing this planetary acquisition, as I call it, in some way benefits them.
Well, I would say yes. The benefits, but how about the human beings? I mean, how about the human beings here on planet Earth? Because if you go to the website www.hybrid, he's a hybrid, well, the HYBRID, hybridchildrencommunity.com, you see that there's a whole movement of all of them now talking about coming back from being incarnated or created on the spaceships. Now coming back to Earth, they say there's a whole flux of them coming back here to interface with the rest of the humanity. What do you think about that? How do you see that?
I don't know a great deal about it, Russell.
Okay.
I really don't. I would say this, though, that I have watched and seen some of the video things from that community you're talking about, and probably half of them, I would say, are living in their imagination. I mean, it's like it's not what they say is not reasonable. I think there's a lot of illusion and delusion going on amongst them. But having said that, the other half are probably genuine returns. And just simply, I would say that the reason they're here was, like that gentleman said, just to live on the planet. In other words, the species, let's say the greys have produced a hybrid, right? Now they are sent that hybrid back to planet Earth to see if they survive here, to see what illnesses they get, to see how their physical body manages, to see how long they can live, because maybe the greys are running out of space and want somewhere else to go. That would be my first thought on it, that the species who are sending hybrids back to experience life on this planet, and they have no other purpose except just to live here as a trial, an experiment, to see whether these beings, these greys or whoever they are that have created the hybrid, could actually come here and live themselves. Now, I understand this as a thing to do, because the Anunnaki have been doing this for thousands of years, right, experimenting with themselves to see how they can increase the longevity of the human form on this planet. They did, you know, in Sumerian times, they had it up to 800 years. the Methuselah and these old biblical people lived, they were designed to live for 800 years. That was the original genetic engineering, that the human being that they genetically altered was designed to live on this planet in perfect health for 800 years. But mistakes were made with the DNA chemistry, if you like, and the lifespan got less and less and less and less, and diseases evolved. So these are long-time experiments by extraterrestrials. I'm sure it's not the first time. The Anunnaki had the edge because they themselves were living on the planet. They did the direct engineering that created Homo sapiens sapiens, and they have been able to observe that now for the last 6,000 years. So that's a pretty decent trial period before they make the corrections in the DNA, which they are in process of preparing now. However, the other species that couldn't get down onto the planet as easily were doing abductions and were putting their DNA into various humans, eventually producing hybrids. And this has gone on for, well, as long as I guess humans have been here to experiment with. But the other species were not so actively bedded in, you might say, on planet Earth as the Anunnaki had been. The Anunnaki were the dominant race during Atlantis. They were here during Atlantis and Lemuria, right? Lemurians were from a different location, but they interacted together. They worked together on many projects, right? Then there was great destruction on the planet, as we know. We have this huge gap in history where everything basically went back, started at the Stone Age again, had to creep back up, right? And eventually we got to the point where the Anunnaki got back here and did the genetic engineering on the then existing hominid species and produced modern man. And from that time on, other species have visited, not lived here like the Anunnaki have done, but visited Earth periodically and done experiments with people. And the purpose of all of them, 99% of the time, is to find out how well they themselves could intermingle with the species on Earth and live here. And it's usually because they have some problems on their own planet. That's usually the case, like the Anunnaki and the problem with their atmosphere where they needed the gold in the first place. The Greys, because of overpopulation on their own planets. They're all looking for new territory. And this is why the very enlightened beings in the universe never visit Earth. They orbit, they pass by, and they observe, but they don't come down and interact with us.
Why?
Because as a species in the universe becomes more enlightened themselves, they move into higher frequencies of life experience, you might say. They're living in a more quantum world. And those species never overpopulate, never destroy their own environment, right? They keep it pristine. They keep it as it should be, as it was intended to be by the Creator. They move in harmony with the Creator. The very evolved beings move in harmony with the Creator, with
but
the all.
But that's as far as we know. Now, there's a vast universe out there that we don't know anything
well,
about.
Well, I know. But they travel all over, right? Enlightened beings travel all over. And there are certain principles. Oh, go on.
No. I was saying, let me get to the reptilians. Now, the reptilians are here and have been for many thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of years, even before the Anunnaki got here. Is that right?
Yes and no.
Yes.
You have to make the distinction between the reptilians like the draconians, the ones who were under Antarctica, who gave technology to Hitler through Maria Orsic, who came from the star system Draco to this planet long time ago, but they could never get here because they were few in number at the time, and the Anunnaki were always fighting with them. For hundreds of thousands of years, that battle between the dark and the light, because the draconian reptilians are very dark, very dark. They don't have good intentions towards humans at all because they are not human. They never will change. There's no way you're going to change them because they come from a different galaxy altogether. They don't even belong in our universe. They got here by mistake. Right. Let me finish. You have the other reptilians, which that young lady who has podcasts on YouTube, Elizabeth April, who is very knowledgeable on the subject and well worth listening to, she is talking about the reptilian beings who were here from the time of the dinosaurs. At the time of the dinosaurs, one small dinosaurus, right, whatever you would call a small dinosaur-type being, became sentient, evolved, just like humans evolved, right? And one of those species was a fairly small build, as I understand Elizabeth April's knowledge, fairly small build, but highly intelligent reptilian being who belonged on Earth, who evolved out of the dinosaur age on Earth. And when the great catastrophe that destroyed the dinosaurs occurred, they went underground. And they have, according to Elizabeth April, lived there in caves and caverns and places under the earth ever since. And she says they are still on the planet. They are not in any way connected to the draconian reptilians who are under Antarctica.
But they belong to the same caste, if you will.
The form they have developed. The reptilians under Antarctica did not develop in our universe. They developed in a different place altogether.
Okay.
I'm not asking you to believe me. I'm just telling you this is the way it was. This is the way it was.
The way it's been shown to me, the way I know it was. Okay, fine. You say you look at it. You got to admit that this is a vast universe of trillions of planets out there, more than we even know, because even the Webb telescope is finding hundreds and hundreds and thousands of more
planets. Yes, but I'll tell you something else about the universe. It's enclosed. It's an enclosed universe.
How could you say that?
I'm just telling you, you'll go and talk to your physicists, talk to whoever, talk to the most advanced, and they probably have realized the same thing by now. It's a unified field, right? And it is fully enclosed. And
from what
it expands.
It expands every day.
I'm telling you, it expands by the mathematics of pi. You know how pi is the mathematics for calculating a circle? Right?
Okay.
Right? That's the math that is used to expand the universe. And it expands in just like fractal geometry on five sides.
Okay.
It grows on five sides.
Listen, we have about 20 minutes because you have to go somewhere and we're running out of time. And I really haven't gotten to the essence of this conversation yet.
Okay.
So we won't get into that. Maybe Neil deGrasse Tyson can come on and talk about how he sees things as an astrophysicist, right? But I want to talk about...
Unless he went to one of the William Tonkin schools, whereas William Tonkin said they taught him nothing but lies.
Okay.
Well... But if you want to know somebody who is on the right track and does understand this stuff absolutely clearly, and that's a man called Robert Edward Grant. And apparently he's on Instagram and he's on YouTube. He's everywhere if you just look for him. Robert Edward Grant.
So we need to listen to his podcast as well as to Elizabeth April. We need to listen to our podcast because it sounds like, according to you and some others, they're right on target in terms of what the research and and their understanding and their comprehension of what's going on in the universe is right on target. Okay, let me do this. There are millions and millions and millions of people who are constantly disappearing on the face of the earth, right? They're being taken off planet, some of whom are taken to Antarctica, I suspect they're still doing that, or Mars or Andromeda or wherever they are taking these people. But I just want to play a clip of some young person who said that she was on the moon and she was treated very badly. Take a listen to this and let's talk about why are they taking people to all these planets in the universe. And what is the purpose of taking the human beings there when we come back?
The planet Earth is not only hollow, but the poles are actually thinned. And there are actually entrances into the inner core at the north and south poles of the Earth. He imagined that there were advanced civilizations living inside the planet.
Ideas of an occupied hollow Earth would be revisited nearly two centuries later in 1947. When famous polar explorer Admiral Richard Byrd flew reconnaissance missions over the North Pole. Byrd allegedly reported in his private journal about a mysterious land beyond the North Pole, which he called the center of the great unknown.
Admiral Richard Byrd was able to fly to the North Pole and back and recorded flying over lush green areas where none should have been. And then 3 years later, he flew over the South Pole.
It's rumored that when Admiral Byrd's task force actually got to Antarctica, that one of the first things they discovered was an entrance into a hollow Earth civilization that was populated by very, very advanced beings.
Admiral Byrd made a lot of unusual statements, including talking about what he called a new kind of craft that could fly from pole to pole. And when Byrd got back to the United States, he was brought back to Washington where he was questioned very heavily about his statements. And allegedly he was told to stop talking about this.
Is it possible that entrances to another world can be found at the Earth's poles? And if so, did Admiral Byrd actually pass through one of them?
Okay, I think we were talking about Operation High Jump. That is the
issue. Yes, they were.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I played the wrong one. But let me continue without, I'm looking at the time here. And you are on a tight schedule. Now, we are saying that people are being taken to other planets and not being treated. Why?
Well, because we are overpopulated on this planet. There's 9 billion of us. In a planet that was originally engineered for much, much less population. We're very crowded, and quite frankly, there are millions of people available to be snatched off the planet that will never be missed. Nobody, you know, it's amazing how often somebody gets picked up by the police and they're a John Doe or a Jane Doe. Something's happened to them and they've died and nobody ever comes to claim them, right? So with this horrible fact of humanity on Earth, this carelessness we have of one another, right, on this planet, it's not surprising that when these other locations need slave labor, they just come and take a handful. Oh, yeah, we'll go down and pick up a dozen people tonight for so-and-so's workshop. Or, I mean, this is just what they do. And the ones who are doing it, I honestly think that their view is probably, well, they don't care about these people, so why should we care? So we might as well take them and make use of them. But an interesting thing has happened in the last 4 or 5 years. The high intelligence and creativity of humanity has suddenly been recognized by these beings from other locations. And now I understand they are getting, some of them, very, very particular about who they take, who they steal away. And they're stealing scientists and mathematicians and some really artists, really creative people, and selling them, not just using them as slave labor, but as a marketable product for other planets throughout the system. Maybe these hundreds of thousands of planets that you talk about, Russell, that are out there somewhere that nobody knows, they're probably getting populated by stolen humans. But this throws out an interesting thought. By, although evil as this is, especially when it's for slave labor, it is interesting that it is the individualized human being from planet Earth that is getting spread like seed far and wide throughout the universe at this time. So who knows? It may be part of a greater plan to have humans of Earth take over the universe. You never know. I mean, there is nothing that's not possible. It could be like a, you know, science fiction story where we are taking over the universe by being spread, as I say, like seeds everywhere.
Well, a gentleman, Emerald Smith, once said, and I believe you know him from Gaia, he's saying everything is possible on this planet. But I just want to play this clip by this young lady who said that she was on the moon and not treated very, very, very respectably, if you will. That's for lack of a better term. So let's...
Niara Terrell Isley, who worked as a radar tracking officer, said she was snatched by a humanoid with a tail and taken to a secret base on the far side of the moon. While there, she said she was made to have sex with aliens and lift boxes. Ms. Isley told how she worked at the Tonopah Test Range, in Nevada, but said she could recall very little detail about her time there. She claimed security guards raped her in front of an audience after she was jabbed in the neck with a mystery drug while in an underground lair. And then she was raped on the moon, she said. Ms. Isley described the bizarre and shocking series of incidents under hypnosis. In taped interviews with Aquarian Radio, she claimed she was taken into space 8 to 10 times over several months when she was 25 years old. She said the aliens put her to work, having her operate electronic machinery to excavate the darkest parts of the moon. Describing how she was used for sex almost every night she was on the moon, she said she was regularly passed between the reptilians. In addition, she said gray aliens were present, helping with the work, as well as human personnel who were also forced to help the reptilians do their bidding on the moon. After the abductions, she said she couldn't remember much of what had happened, including aspects of her work, leading her to think her memory had been wiped. The incident stopped in 1980, she said. She sought hypnosis in an attempt to fill the holes in her memory, and it helped her uncover more details about the abuse she experienced on the moon. Describing her abductor, she said, he was humanoid and did have a tail. She said he had yellow eyes with vertical slit pupils. On the dark side of the moon, she said, there was a lot of sexual abuse. She also said there was excavation work to expand the military base. It was then that she had to carry out manual labor, including moving boxes. Ms. Isley, a mum of one who now lives in Colorado, said, at night I wasn't allowed to sleep and was passed around for more sex. I was scared. I knew I had to get back to my daughter, so I was pretty compliant. I just didn't want to do anything that would get me killed. Many alien conspiracy theories suggest that the U.S. government is in on abductions, often helping the Greys do the work. Theorists claim that is why officials have not fully investigated claims of their own employees and former staff.
So that's a big subject matter. Not only is that happening on the moon, but it's happening on spaceships. And you saw the motion picture taken by Stephen.
Yes, yeah.
And it was all in that whole 13-hour miniseries that people have been taken from their bedrooms and through the windows or through the doors or through the ceilings. And I'm going to ask you how that's done, number one. And two, is that still continuing on in that fashion?
Okay. Well, first, most abductions of a negative nature, the ones that were the Greys, where they would take them down to the underground base at Dulce and these other underground bases all over the world, most of those stopped around 1998. There's been very little of that kind of abduction going on since then, simply because most of those aliens left the planet at that time. There was kind of a general clear out went on. because of the new energy coming in, the new energy that's coming in on planet Earth and other places, not just Earth. So yes, there are a few abductions still going on, but not many. And then the other part of what you were saying, what was the other part you were saying?
No, I was saying that continues to go on. Why was that going on? And it's still going, but millions and millions of people are still being missing. And you're saying that now they've been used.
Being used as slave labor and also being taken now because of their intelligence and creativity.
Right, right.
It's like a brain drain going on. But it's true that the reptilians have had their base on the dark side of the moon, because the Anunnaki had ships all around this planet fighting off the reptilians for thousands of years to prevent them getting down onto the planet. Well, as the governments of the world started listening to the reptilians because of their reptilian willingness to feed them technological advances, and because of other species like the Pleiadians trading with the governments to feed them technological advances, then, and the fact that over these thousands of years, the reptilians have massively increased in number. They are one of the great, if not probably the greatest, space-faring species out there right now. They are huge, right, in terms of, I won't say they have a monopoly, but they certainly are more advanced than most in when it comes to technology and space. And they are now directly tied with the US government. So they have this easy passage on and off the Earth. But the reason they built the base on the moon in the first place was because the Anunnaki wouldn't let them get down to Earth. They wouldn't let them make those inroads. And it was probably not until, maybe the 12th or 13th century that they actually began to get down to the planet and interact with the governments on the planet. And you actually see this, any historian would be able to tell you better than me, might have been as earlier, might have been as far back as the 11th century, but there was a time moving into the Middle Ages when they started creating faces of gargoyles and putting them on their churches. When Christianity had taken a hold, maybe it was the 11th century, but in my mind it seems more like the 12th, 13th. And those gargoyles were actually modeled on reptilian beings that had been seen by people, described by people as being on the planet. Well, we do know that, of course, that the reptilians are shapeshifters, and in modern times, they simply use the energy to shapeshift themselves and look like perfectly normal human beings. And so we can't tell that they're the reptilians, but they are walking among us, disguised as humans.
You could say that about the Queen. I heard somebody say that about the Queen or about
I don't know about the Queen, but there was one very reputable person who was the housekeeper for a lifetime, and her husband, I think, was the gamekeeper for Chequers, the place, the Prime Minister's country home, where he takes important people out to the country for the weekend, the Prime Minister of Britain. And at one time, there was a Prime Minister a few years ago, not that long ago, called Ted Heath. He came right after Margaret Thatcher. And Ted Heath actually was well known to my family, right? One of my cousins was a friend of his, but I don't think he ever knew this about him. This housekeeper lady took her dog walking in the woods one night when the Prime Minister and a group of his people were at Chequers for the weekend. And she took her dog out into the woods to exercise it before bedtime. And in the woods, there was the Prime Minister with his friends, all wearing cloaks and standing around in a circle around a campfire. So she just stood back and watched to see what was happening. And she said she's never been so terrified in her life because the prime minister morphed into a reptilian, 2 feet taller, and became reptilian. And the other people in the circle didn't bat an eye. It was perfectly normal to them that he would do this. So it was basically a reptilian grouping. And she actually made these statements to the police authorities in the UK. The record of it is always Scotland Yard, I believe, that, you know, this woman was of impeccable background. There was nobody thought for a moment that she was making it up, that this was a real event that happened. So, yeah, they are among us and probably in the highest places throughout our industry and everywhere. Well, I know they are in the industry. You know, they're managing the industrial complex in America. So.
And I think Eisenhower talked about that, and so did John F. Kennedy talk about that. Okay.
Yes.
So the one percenters, Illuminati, if you will, Bilderbergers, Trilateral, whatever, so they are in control of the world, and you consider them the cabal, the dark forces. That's, you said that earlier on, right?
Yes, I consider that.
You're saying they are the dark forces because, as David Icke talks about it, because they represent total control over humanity and taking away free will from the people. Is that
right.
A good way to say that?
Yes, yes. They want absolute control, and they simply want the rest of us to be their servants.
Okay.
And they will get rid. They will get rid of us. The ones they don't want. In fact, George Green, my late husband.
Yes.
He said that on the meetings he sat in Washington, it was discussed that when the time was ripe for the complete takeover by the cabal, the one world order, the one world government, when they put it into place, anybody over the age of 44 years who did not have a skill that they wanted, they would get rid of, they would euthanize. And then that was their intention. And that's a lot of years since George sat in on those meetings, I mean, 30 years ago. So this plan of the cabal, it really has been in the works for thousands of years. And you can trace it through history with all the efforts to defeat it and the plan itself. If you are a history buff, for instance, you can follow it through all the lines of rulership on this planet. Rulership is intended to be servitude. The king priest is intended to serve the people, right? Not control them, but serve them. Make things happen that are for the benefit of the people, to allow the people to grow and develop and evolve. The cabal's idea of rulership is we control you with a big stick and you do exactly as we tell you and you have no free will. And throughout history, you have seen how we got to this point. The breakaway really began with the Merovingian, end of the Merovingian line in France and Gaul, and then the downing of the Stuart line, which was was and is the true lineage of the Christ, the continuing lineage of the House of David from biblical times is genetically housed in the Stuart line, which were the Scottish Stuart line. And that was completely defeated, right? And the cabal began to make serious inroads on humanity at the time that they finally got rid of the Stuarts and put in their Habsburgs rulers in Europe and in Britain. The kings and queens of Britain are not even English descendantly. They are German and they're from the Habsburg line, predominantly the Goethe line, Habsburg Goethe. And so now we have out of London, England, where really the rulership of this planet fans out from the city of London, which is one square mile that controls the finances and is in league with Washington constantly. They have a constant relationship, a constant partnership. And So they are basically spreading rule over the whole planet. And a great deal of it goes on in Switzerland. This is why Switzerland always remains neutral, because in a neutral country, you can do things that you can't do in non-neutral countries, right? So this is a global situation that has gone on, and it's gone on throughout history. And the cabal believe they are finally bringing it to fruition in conjunction with the German Fourth Reich, which is partnered, one-on-one partnership with the reptilians from Draco, the Draconians, hand in hand with the U.S. Pentagon Army branch, the branch of the Army out of the Pentagon, and the military-industrial complex in the U.S. This okay. is basically ruling the world, and we have one thing standing against it right now, and that is the new, or known to be new, it's not really new, but known to be new, American Space Force out of the Naval Academy in Colorado,
but
where they're selecting the pilots.
But wait a minute, isn't that also controlled by the Secret Space Force?
No. Part of it is. Part of it is. One half of it is. But there is another section of our Space Force, more recently introduced, that is against, that works against that. I think it's called by a different name. And it's fighting against the reptilians and the taking off the planet of people, the abduction of mass numbers of people.
Okay. Now, 99% of the Earth's population is controlled by the elite, the 1%, by the Council of the 13 Families. And let me just run a couple names. I see Rothschilds, the Cavendish, the De Medici, the Hanover, the Habsburg, the Rockefellers, Sinclairs, the Windsor. They are all in that 1 percentile. Is that what I understand?
Well, you've got a mistake in there, if I may correct.
Okay.
The Sinclairs are a hugely powerful family, but they are the true descendants on the lineage of Christ. The others are the descendants from the families that have joined with and branched out from the Lombardy family that essentially created the banking system that we have. So all the others are part of the global banking system, and that comprises the vast majority of the families involved in controlling us, the cabal.
Okay.
The cabal are the great banking families. The Sinclair family are the true descendants of the lineage of Christ.
Okay, let's go over the other side, the light forces. So you're talking about Jesus and Krishna and Buddha and Baha'u'llah and Zoroaster. You're talking about a Martin Luther King, those kind of people on the light side. Is that where we are?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
How is that battle faring? As here we are, the battle's been going on. You want to get some water? If you do.
No, I'm listening to you. I'm listening.
Okay. But I'm just saying, how is that making up? Because I can do something about George Green if you want to get some water.
But I didn't hear the question.
Okay. How are we making out between the light side and the dark side?
Ooh.
That's the issue of the day.
Who's winning? Right.
Because, I interviewed a young lady a couple of weeks ago or a couple of days ago, and you were saying that she's probably unwittingly working for the dark side based on the conversation that she was. What gave you that clue that she could possibly do that and not knowing it? Not knowing the fact that she was working. Go ahead. Help us out.
We all have our own perception of ourselves, our lives, and we all have our own truth, right? I have no doubt that that lady was telling a true story that had happened to her, right? And that she didn't understand how that story had happened to her. And it had happened to her because she'd opened her mind to the dark side. Now, we don't necessarily do that intentionally, but there is something of some weakness or something in some people that makes them more susceptible. In the same way that an enlightened being, you know when you fly in an airplane over a country and you look down on it and at night and it's all got little lights dotted all over where there are towns and cities. Well, that's the same with enlightened people. When the great beings are looking at us, down on us, if you like, the enlightened beings are glowing. They have a light with them. And the ones who are serving the dark side are different. There's a different energy comes off the dark side. But people are not aware of this in themselves necessarily. Nobody is intentionally going to say, oh, yes, I'm signing up to do evil, or I'm signing up to be a bad person and help the dark side. Most of us wouldn't do that. Most of us are good people. And what I was saying about that person was I was not doubting that she was a good person and well-intentioned, right? But it's the old saying, good intentions are the road to hell sometimes, right? And those good intentions of telling her story over and over again were serving the dark side. She felt that she was opening up and letting people know this story, right? And she wanted good things to happen. But what she was actually doing was putting out a story which other people would listen to. They might even believe it. And if they did, then they were opening their own minds to the dark side because the story came about due to a dark encounter. And the lady obviously did not know who she had encountered. That it was a dark side encounter. And by sharing it with all these other people, she's opening them up themselves to dark side encounters.
My question is, how does one discern the difference?
You listen. You listen to what people are telling you. And then you take it into yourself and say, does this sound right to me? Let me tell you something, Russell. Every living soul is created with the knowledge of right and wrong. We all know from the day we are born, does this feel right? Is this right or is it wrong? We know it in our heart of hearts. We know it in our gut. We feel it, right? If you feel that a dark story feels very good to you, then you are involved with the dark side yourself. If you think that, you know, reading or watching movies about that, what was that horrible murder man who was a cannibal? Manson, right. If these stories fascinate you and you want to watch the movie and watch it over again and read what they wrote, there's something wrong with you. There's a darkness in you that you are gravitating to that darkness. And so you pay attention, you listen, and you decide, does it feel right to you? I'm not talking about clairvoyance or people who can actually see. I'm talking about normal people who have not known or developed their esoteric abilities to see clairvoyancy and so on and so forth. And so they need to go by what's in their heart, by their gut feeling. And anybody listening to that story would recognize it as a very dark tale. And if it fascinated them, then they have a problem.
Yep. All right. Here's a question. Two or three questions, and I know you have to go. How will people know who are just garnering, just beginning to get an idea that what we are talking about is real? Because a lot of people will listen to this show, or listen to shows like this, even this, listening to Elizabeth April or David Icke or whomever, talk about this and say, this is all BS because I was raised in the Protestant or Catholic or Methodist Church or the Seventh-day Adventist, and we don't believe that. We just believe there's a heaven and a hell, and that the fight between good and bad or dark and light is happening on this planet, and that's the end of that. There are no entities out there in the universe. We are the only persons out there in the whole vastness of the universe, to human beings. No, there are no other entities at all. As a matter of fact, you talk about underground bases. You talk about Antarctica. You say there are caverns and underground bases and all that. They said that the world is flat. So what do you say to people like that?
Well, I say that those people who choose such abject ignorance as a method of running their lives will really deserve all they get. I mean, whatever happens to them, they will have deserved it, because everybody in this world today, well, not everybody, but most people, the vast majority, are capable of reading. Millions and millions of us have access to the internet, right? Even more billions of us have access to radios. Half the world has smartphones. In other words, the information is out there, and if they do not choose to educate themselves, when they have educated themselves, if they say, no, I now have read all this, I understand it, I know what they're talking about, but I still don't believe it, right? Well, I guess they've been so brainwashed that there is absolutely no hope for them. But here is the problem. They have a belief, not knowledge. And what we need to do is seek knowledge. We need to learn. We need to question. And I've said this many times, the truth, the real truth of anything never changes. But our understanding of it changes constantly. And the only way we can grow in our understanding is by gaining knowledge, by investigating, by seeking out information, by studying it, by working out what is accurate information and what is not accurate information. So it's perfectly possible for us to do that. Silly people will find some far-out speaker on some strange pod show who is telling fantastic stories, and they will say, oh yeah, I like that story, that's what I'm going to believe, right? What I'm saying to everybody is believe nothing. Read, listen, pay attention to gain knowledge. Believe nothing, not even Einstein. Believe nothing until you know for sure that it is true for yourself. And when you know that it is true, because in one way or another it has proven to be so, then you can say, okay, I have knowledge, but you don't need belief. Right. You do not need it. It doesn't help you.
But the average person doesn't have telepathy and remote viewing, and they're not clairvoyant or psychic or intuitive. How would you begin to develop those skills? We're not taught those skills in the classrooms.
Just like I'm saying, gain knowledge. Every esoteric skill, clairaudience, clairvoyance, healing, you name it, every single one of them is a matter of a frequency, right? It's like a singer. A singer might be a soprano, or if it's a man, he might be a bass singer, or he might be a tenor. They are matters of the octave that he is singing in, right? The ability to sing in certain octaves. Each octave you move up a keyboard doubles the frequency of those notes, right? So all the esoteric skills are simply a matter of frequency. And when you do the work on yourself, because it is all about self-correction, when you honestly look at yourself, then you can start making improvements in yourself, your character, your behavior. And when you start making improvements in yourself, then you move up a notch in the sense that your frequency will increase. The better you become, the more perfected you become, the higher your frequency. The higher your frequency, the more access you will have, so that you don't learn to be a clairvoyant or a clairaudient or a healer. You become one because you have done the work on yourself, because you have objectively looked at yourself with honesty and said, I have this problem, I have this fault, I have that fault. And you have maybe spent many, many lifetimes correcting your own faults, all of them, because none of us are perfect. And each time you correct a fault, your frequency increases, and then you move into the frequency where these things are automatic.
But would you say that when you listen to David Icke or Michael Seller, or even looking at Dr. Stephen Greer, who's going to Washington, D.C. and hold a big press conference on June 10th, 11th, 12th, and 13th, and that's going to be broadcast all over the world to billions of people. Would you say that we have to just kind of pay attention to a book like, what's that, Selling Jesus? What was that? Saving Jesus.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
These souls, and all the ones you just mentioned, Dr. Seller, David Icke, Saving Jesus writer, Dr. Ledwith, these are all souls who have many times been to this planet, who have learned many, many lessons, have honed themselves to that level of ability where they have said, okay, in this lifetime, I'm not going to just be going around as a priest or a minister or a healer or an obviously enlightened being. I'm going to use my intellect this time around to be a writer, to be an author, to be a gatherer of information that I can offer out to other people. So that's their way of helping to heal the planet, by putting out good information. Now, if you want to spend your time reading Harlequin romance novels, you're not going to learn anything. You're just wasting your time, right?
But that's good entertainment, isn't it?
Well, I mean, if you want a life filled with nothing but entertainment, yes.
I actually read Foxes of Harold and the Dixon by, you know.
There are many things out there that are designed for our entertainment, and I have no problem with reading for entertainment. Right now, one of the books I'm in the middle of reading is Dan Brown's Lost Symbol. It's a great book, and I'm really enjoying it. So,
why did you decide in the last couple of minutes, why did you decide to come back to this planet? You had said you've been incarnated dozens and dozens of times, even going back to the crashing of the spaceships before.
I did not choose to come back. No, I was ordered. I was ordered to come back. Because I had agreed to come back for a specific purpose.
Let me ask you a question. You said you have been incarnated at least a dozen times on this planet, right? Yes or no?
Oh, yeah, at least. Yes.
But did you volunteer to come back several of those times?
Yes, I volunteered to come back all the times except this last time. And this last time I had agreed to come back, and then at the last minute I tried to change my mind, but I wasn't allowed, and I was literally picked up and thrown down.
Wow.
So it was interesting.
So they can force you to come here if you don't want to come here. I thought the soul had a choice. Whether it wanted
well,
to
you
incarnated.
Know, we all have bosses. We all have people over us. We all have supervisors. And I'd made an agreement to come and do this job. And then at the last minute, I saw the way the actual life, I didn't mind doing the job. That was no problem. It was just a small job that needed somebody to do. And I'd agreed to do it. That was fine. No trouble at all there. But when I had got closer to the time and had a look at the way it was going to be, the life was going to be, I didn't like the look of it, so I tried to get out of it, and they wouldn't wear it. They said, no, get down there, get on with it.
You've been here more than 70. Are you planning on coming back again?
I am told that I have already agreed to do, and I know I have agreed to this, I've agreed to do 300 to 400 years on this planet, as one lifetime for helping to clean up the mess after this chaos ends that we're in now. We're in chaos right now, and it's going to get exponentially worse over the next year or two, and it will be chaotic, and there will be a great need for a cleaning crew. So I'm part of the cleanup, and I've got janitorial duties. I always used to say, you know, when I trained as a registered nurse years ago, I always said, well, there's one thing, I'm well qualified as a toilet cleaner. Well, sadly, it looks as if that's the kind of duty I'll have for the next 300 or 400 years, because this planet is becoming like a toilet.
Why is that? Because of the 26,000-year revolving of Nibiru?
We've got the 50,000-year geological changes going on anyway. Those are normal. Those do occur about geophysically about every 50,000 years on this planet. So that's perfectly normal. But you do get the increase in tidal waves, earthquakes, things like that happening all over the planet, and we're seeing more of that since 2017. 2017 was the nearest pass of Nibiru to the planet on this orbit, and that triggered a whole slew of earthquakes, particularly in the Middle East area, and tidal waves and other things were set in motion. But that is going to continue and probably get worse for a period of time. But the worst thing, those things don't ever bother me. The worst thing that we need to be afraid of, basically, is human beings, because we're going to be, with the events that are coming up through the Cabal's plans, we're going to be driven to a planet full of crazy people. What I fear is the civil unrest, the chaos in the streets. I'm afraid the gutters will be running with blood at some point, and it's not going to be good. And I am concerned about it. And especially now, as you know, it's been made known that government has plans to follow China's plan and turn everybody's bank account. This is a good thing to be ending up with, a warning to people. If you've got cash in the bank, think about getting most of it out. Because, as you know, China did a thing a while ago. They decided that everybody's saving account was an investment in the bank. And this is to secure themselves, the small banks. And so they converted everybody's savings into CDs, certificates of deposit. And then the people can't get their money out. And the money just has to stay in the bank. And I hear that our government is planning on doing the same thing in the very near future. So be warned.
I hear Robert Kiyosaki and Ron Paul and others are talking about the crash of the dollar.
Of the dollar, yeah. Well, the dollar's already crashed. You know, because we use the dollar here and it's our local currency, and it will be our local currency for some time to come for buying and selling locally. Even when they go onto this CD system, it'll be no use at the grocery store saying, here, take the number of my CD and get your money out from there. That won't work. So you need cash. We're going to need actual cash for some time to come.
Go ahead. It says what? Go ahead. I was going to ask about Bitcoin and altcoins and all that
no,
stuff.
No. The cryptocurrency thing. The banks are using and prepping for cryptocurrency worldwide. This was done in Switzerland a decade ago. The five major banking houses that process world banking in Switzerland already switched over to cryptocurrency systems that will handle that. And this is part of the taking your money off you and converting it to CDs. But the Bitcoin itself, I would not think that it will have any use, because it's the government, so far as I understand it, is not intending on using Bitcoin, but in simply developing a system of their own, very similar to the Bitcoin system. So going to continue. But Bitcoin itself, or anything that you have right now, I'd be selling and getting the cash out. And if there was enough of the cash, I'd be buying gold.
Gold, silver.
If I had gold and silver. Yes, silver's got plenty of room to keep moving up. The ratio between gold and silver is way off. So silver could definitely advance a great deal. And I think gold, somebody told me the other day gold was going up. And I think it will continue.
60 seconds left. What would you say? What would you tell people? 60 seconds. I'm glad you were here today to help us with the light and the dark side. I guess some people got a clearer understanding of what we're talking about. But go ahead. 10, 15 seconds, 20 seconds.
I hope so. And I would strongly suggest that everybody in some way, great or small, becomes what they call a prepper, because some difficult times may well lie ahead of us over the next 2 years. So try and get cash in your house, get food in your house, make sure you have a good source of water. And if you're relying on city water only, start saving water, you know, in containers, whatever containers, camping containers are great, which you can sterilize with bleach and then store water in for years. So water is going to be a great need in the future. And make sure that you have some means of protecting yourself, protecting your property, if you have property. It really is a time when we need to be taking seriously the responsibility for self-survival. And that is in addition to also looking towards the light all the time. Just keep moving towards the light. Don't even harbor dark thoughts. Keep your mind always on the light, and the light will protect you. Put the light around you in all things. But remember, it's not just the spirit, it's the works as well. It's no use doing absolutely nothing to protect yourself, to make preparation, and then expecting the light to give it all to you. The light will protect the preparations that you make. So you still have to do the practical things as well.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate you. Have a happy Easter. And I understand that you're off to have a lunch and a great lunch. So I hope you have a great lunch. And
well,
thank you very much for being
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Russell. And let us once again remind ourselves who is risen today and what it means for all of us. What he did, we can do, and more. So let us remember a word of praise for our good Lord.
And that's
okay,
John
Russell.
14:12. Thank you. Have a good one. See
Thank
you later,
you.
And see you next time. Bye now.
Bye.
I mean, that's got me in trouble in Billy.
I presume that you are not in a position to help us meet Billy.
No. Well, Billy doesn't want to meet anybody. You already met somebody.
My impression.
What's his name down at... supposedly his liaison might
be. Yeah, we did.
But I don't know if he'd help here or not either. But, you know, Billy...
No, I know Michael, you know...
Michael Horn?
Yeah,
well,
I know Michael.
You know, they got mad at
me.
He's
tried, but we haven't...
No, I published the Talmud of Emmanuel over there, and they got all mad about that because I didn't put the German in it. Yeah, I don't know if you understand the original. When I got the Talmud, we had a college kid translated from that high German, that Schweizer Deutsch, into English. And my wife and I took the documents over. I mean, this is even another more strange... We just took the documents over here, and we immediately, I sent out a whole bunch of copies to people. One of them was to a guy named, he's in California, I'm going to his name on that thing. Anyway, he reprinted it, and they changed some stuff around. And when he was channeling so-called Hatton, and the information we got was that was really good stuff. And I dropped $500,000 and got a divorce, actually about $1 million, and got a divorce over that thing because we thought they were really connected with, you know, that group, and it turned out to be a big swindle.
Oh, man.
Anyway, they published the Talmud, their version of it. Well, my wife and Jim Deardorff worked on it for 2 years. Well, now we got another problem that stepped in. That was my ex-wife. I've only been married a few months, just so you know. But my ex-wife and I, we spent 20 years going running around the world, you know, playing the game, but... When we met Billy over there, we kind of made agreements together. Well, what was the problem with the Talmud? That was the teachings of Emmanuel or Christ, right? Well, where did Christ go, and where is he now? Well, we became in contact. Now that stops the whole story again, doesn't it? With
Meaning?
The Christ being Emmanuel, who calls himself Sananda right now. Then we got the information on the translation of the Talmud, so then we did it, and we said, why do we want to put the German down? Because Billy wasn't responsible for that. That was the Greek priest, Rashid, who did the translation from Aramaic into Schweizer Deutsch. There wasn't any copyright. It wasn't Billy's anyway in the first place. So what we did is then we were working on doing the translations. Then we were in contact directly with the Christ being energy it's kind of like what I did the Nostradamus material with Dolores Cannon. You familiar with her?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I didn't know you did that.
Dolores Cannon couldn't talk to anybody. She was stutterer all the time. And she sent me the manuscript. I so read the manuscript, and I told Desiree, I says, you know, this is pretty interesting. Let's check it out. So we made a contract. We published Dolores Cannon's first book, Conversations with Nostradamus, Volume 1 and Volume 2. I then set it up because we had a place in Beverly Hills. We got NBC and CBS to do our features on it.
Well, that's George Green. That's the husband of Gillian Green. He crossed over a couple of years ago. And if you want to see more work of his, you can always go to the YouTube and punch him up, George Green. Or you can go to his website that he left with us, which is nohoax.net. That's nohoax, H-O-A-X.net. Thanks for listening. See you next time. And I hope you have a great, great holiday.